Glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So a reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 24, Text 67. Prithya Savai Guru Baram Shapayan Kurunam. Prithya Savai Guru Baram Shapayan Kurunam. Antasamuta kalina yudi bupakamba. Antasamuta kalina yudi bupakamba. Dristya vid yuha vijaye jayam udvigoshya. Dristya vidhuya vijaye jayam udvigoshya. Prochyodhavaya chaparam samagat swadama. Prochyodhavaya chaparam samagat swadama. Prithya Savai Guru Baram Shapayan Kurunam. Antasamuta Kalina Yudibupakamba. Dristya Viduha Viduya Vijaye Jayam Udvigoshya. Prochyodhavaya chaparam samagat swadama. Others. Prithya savanga. Vaishnavis. Ya, on the earth. Sa, he, Lord Krishna. Vai, indeed. Guru Baram, a great burden. Shapayan, completely finishing. Guru Nam, of the personalities born in the Kuru dynasty. Antasamuta Kalina, by creating enmity between the brothers by disagreement. Yudhi, in the battle of Kurukshetra. Bhupakamba, all the demoniac kings. Dristya, by his glance. Vihuya, cleansing their sinful activities. Vijaye, in victory. Jayam, victory. Udvigoshya, declaring the victory for Arjuna. Prochya, giving instructions. Uddhavaya, unto Uddhava. Cha, also. Param, transcendental. Samagat, returned. Svadhamma, to his own place. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, Lord Sri Krishna created a misunderstanding between family members just to diminish the burden of the world. Simply by his glance, he annihilated all the demoniac kings on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and declared victory for Arjuna. Finally, he instructed Uddhava about transcendental life and devotion, and then returned to his abode in his original form. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Parichanaya sadhanam vinishaya duskritam. The mission of Lord Krishna was performed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, for by the Lord's mercy Arjuna was victorious due to being a great devotee, whereas the others were killed simply by the Lord's glance, which cleansed them of all sinful activities and enabled them to attain sarupya. Finally, Lord Krishna instructed Uddhava about the transcendental life of devotional service, and then, in due course of time, he returned to his abode. The Lord's instructions in the form of Bhagavad Gita are full of jnan and vairagya, knowledge and renunciation. In the human form of life, one must learn these two things, how to become detached from the material world and how to acquire full knowledge in spiritual life. This is the Lord's mission, paritranaya sadhanam vinishaya chaduskritam. After executing his complete mission, the Lord returned to his home, Goloka Vrindavan. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 24th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's a little note here. Completed in Bhuvaneshwar, India, on the occasion of establishing a Krishna Balaram temple. And that is the end of the ninth canto. So, we just finished the ninth canto. And it's been a wonderful journey, right? An amazing journey. We've heard about the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. In this canto, Lord Ramachandra, Lord Parashuram, Maharaj Ambarish, Maharaj Yayati, Sobri Muni, Chaivana Muni. Anybody remember more? There's more. Anyway, and on and on. It's been like an amazing, journey through this ninth canto. And now we're... Today is the last verse. Tomorrow we'll be starting the tenth canto. So, and hopefully we've learned a lot of important things, hearing all these different pastimes throughout the ninth canto, which have been preparing us for hearing about Krishna in the tenth canto, which we're about to hear. So, today's verse. Translation. Thereafter, Lord Sri Krishna created a misunderstanding between family members just to diminish the burden of the world. Okay, so what does that mean? Why would creating a misunderstanding between family members diminish the burden of the world? Okay. Anybody who's not initiated, I want to make a guess at that. Let's see how educated our uninitiated devotees are here. Any uninitiated person here who knows what the answer to that question is? How would creating a misunderstanding between family members diminish the burden of the world? Okay. Well, yeah, Bhakti Eric, he's uninitiated. Okay. What would you say the answer is? You know what? Actually, that could be, yeah, that's a correct answer. And you just kind of really threw a loop, because for some reason when I read that, I was thinking of the Yadu dynasty. But actually, now that you said that, you're probably, because the rest of it in the purport, there's no mention of the Yadu dynasty anywhere there. So, yeah, he said, I asked, the question was, how does a misunderstanding between family members diminish the burden of the world? And he actually gave what I think is the correct answer. Because for some reason I read that and I was thinking, oh, that's referring to the members of the Yadu dynasty and how Krishna created that they'd have a fratricidal, a war among the brothers, because they were the burden. The Yadu dynasty became a burden at some point because they became puffed up. They became puffed up with their opulence and the fact that they were, Krishna's descendants, and that there's that pastime where Samba went before the great sages, and he was actually making fun of them, and he said, oh, he dressed up like a young girl that was pregnant, and he said, oh, we want to know what this. The brothers pushed him forward and said, we want to know what this girl will give birth to, and the sages could understand that they were being mocked. So they said, oh, well, this girl, I don't think they were fooled. Said, but I can't remember whether they said he will or, this girl. It'll be a big ball of iron, and it'll be the destruction of your dynasty. And they were totally freaked out. And sure enough, the next day, it was uncovered, and, that was what was there. They took it to Maharaj Ugrasena, and explained the whole situation to him, and he realized, uh-oh, we got a problem here. But anyway, let's do the best we can to try to do something about it. So he had it shaved down into iron filings, and then distributed all the iron filings on the ocean there. But anyway, what happened was, the tide came in, the filings came in, and they somehow or another became sucked up in the reeds of the bamboo there. And on one occasion later on, so these bamboo things, they were like lead, they were like iron rods. And at a later date, the Yadu dynasty got into, they were drinking, I think they got intoxicated drinking rice wine, and they had a big fight. And during the fight, they were grabbing these, iron lead line or iron line, iron lead line bamboo shoots, and they were hitting each other, weathermen, they killed each other like that. But actually, that's not what's being referred to here. I throw that in there anyway, since I prepared it and it's Krishna Katha. But actually, Bhakta Eric, I think, gave the correct answer. It's actually referring to the Battle of Kurukshetra, because that's what's being mentioned here in the purport and in the translation. Yeah, yeah. So by creating a misunderstanding between family members, Krishna diminished the burden of the world. Battle of Kurukshetra, that the Pandavas and the Kauravas, as Bhakta Eric said, that the Kauravas were trying to usurp the kingdom that was supposed to be for the Pandavas. Everybody knows that story, that Maharaj Pandu was the emperor, and actually, it's really like an interesting story, because his brother, his older brother, Dhritarashtra, was supposed to be the emperor, but he was born blind, so he was, you know, couldn't be an emperor if you're born blind. So Maharaj Pandu became the emperor, and but he was very, like, not very robust and good, you know, didn't have strong health. So anyway, at an early age, he passed away. He passed away. And the Pandavas were all too young, you know, to assume the throne. So Dhritarashtra put his son Duryodhana there, you know, for the time being, to be in charge. They were kind of, and the understanding was that when Maharaj Yudhisthira comes of age, the kingdom, you know, the empire will be turned over to the Pandavas. Maharaj Yudhisthira will be in charge, and that's what will happen. But Dhritarashtra started getting other ideas. He said, "Well, you know, actually, I should have been the emperor in the first place, and you know, I wasn't able to, so went to my younger brother Pandu, and you know, he couldn't do it. Anyway, now it seems like it's okay. Why not have my son Duryodhana be the emperor?" So anyway, so they didn't want to give it back. And even before the actual time came when they were supposed to give it back, they understood what was coming. So there was always, you know, tension and enmity between the Kauravas and the Pandavas. Actually, mostly it was going one way. It was one direction, enmity and aggression. It was going from the direction of the Kauravas towards the Pandavas. The Pandavas were very pious and very innocent, and they weren't feeling inimical necessarily into the Kauravas, but they were receiving a lot of that kind of treatment. So anyways, it's a long story, and that's the Mahabharata. But yeah, Krishna, he created that. Krishna created that misunderstanding. And the reason is giving here, because ultimately Krishna could understand that there would be the war, the Battle of Kurukshetra, and during that battle, so many unnecessary, you know, I think the Krishna book starts off when the earth was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of so many demoniac kings, etc., right? So that was what was going on. There was a lot of unnecessary, you know, buildup of military strength among demoniac kings, and Krishna wanted to kind of clear that all out, you know, to give people a chance to do what they're supposed to do in the human form of life, which is Dharma Samsa. The next verse, Prabhupada quotes twice, Paritranaya Sadhanam Vinishaya Chaduskritam, in this purport. But the next line is Dharma Samstapanardaya, which means reestablish principles of religion. See, so Krishna wanted to clear the playing field, so to speak, you know, to give a chance to reestablish the principles of religion so that people could do in the human form of life what they're supposed to do, which is develop, as Prabhupada once again says here in his purport, Gyan and Vairagya. It says the human form of life is meant for developing Gyan and Vairagya, knowledge and renunciation. And that's what, you know, why, you know, it says the Bhagavad Gita is full of that. See, so, it's, you know, Krishna's clearing, getting rid of all these impious, demoniac kings, and then simultaneously, he's speaking the Bhagavad Gita and, you know, giving people the proper understanding. And in this way, through that device, you know, Krishna is diminishing the burden of the world. So that's what that first sentence means. And thank you, Bhakta Eric, for, you know, getting that. The next sentence, simply by his glance, he annihilated all the demoniac kings on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So what does that mean, simply by his glance? I mean, are we meant to take that literally? Does that mean that, you know, when the Battle of Kurukshetra was happening, that at some point Krishna just went and annihilated all the warriors? Well, that's not, I don't think so. That's not what we hear described as having happened. because, you know, we get further, more detailed descriptions in the Mahabharata, and it didn't actually go exactly like that. I think that's kind of meant to be taken figuratively or metaphorically. Simply by his glance means Krishna made a decision. You know, Krishna made a decision. These guys are finished. You know, they you know, they're impious, they're adharmic, and you know, they just and most important, they're obstructing the opportunity of other living entities, pious, innocent living entities, to properly take advantage of their human form of life. You see, it's one thing to, you know, be a non-devotee yourself. That's already bad. But when you're a non-devotee in such a way that you're obstructing the opportunity of other innocent people from becoming devotees, that's a lot worse. And that's what was going on. And that's what Krishna was, you know, why Krishna, as it says in the first sentence, he created that misunderstanding among the family members to diminish that. That was the burden. That's the actual burden. Puffed up powerful people who are, you know, totally in illusion about what the real purpose of life is and who are interfering with other people's opportunities to properly utilize the human form of life. And that's actually what we have happening on Earth today. And hopefully something's going to happen to remedy that, or to, you know, to counteract that. This Hare Krishna movement's supposed to be part of that, you know, but anyway, hopefully that's what will happen. And we'll see it happening in bigger and bigger ways as time goes on. But getting back to the specific point about the glancing, you know, yeah, so it's not that, as I said, I don't think it's meant to be taken literally that Krishna just went zoop and zapped everybody out. No. He decided. And for Krishna, that's possible. There's a very nice paragraph here in this ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita where this is, you know, explained a bit how that works. And I'll just read it. Prabhupada says, 9.5, second paragraph, says, in the Nirukti Veda dictionary it is said, Yujate Nenga Durgateshu Karyeshu, the Supreme Lord is performing inconceivably wonderful pastimes, displaying his energy, unquote. That's Prabhupada. His person is full of different potent energies, and his determination is itself actual fact. That's the sentence I was really, thinking about. His determination, his person is full of different potent energies. That one phrase, his determination is itself actual fact. So Krishna just has to decide, you know, okay, so be it. And that's it. You don't have to do anything else. Krishna just decides, so be it. And it happens. Parashya Shakti Vividhai Vishyute Swabhavikya Jnana Balakriya Cha. That Krishna's got all these different energies. And, he just has to decide to do this. He wants something to happen. And then the energies just swing into action and do what he wants, you know. Prabhupada would give the example of a big man, you know, in a company. He doesn't physically get up and do so many different things. He just sits in his office and he thinks and, you know, if he's got something he wants to happen, he presses a button, you know, and then so many secretaries come in and whatever. They, you know, it's all carried out by his energies, by his employees like that. So in the same way, Krishna has these different energies. And you know, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and different places, this is further described. But basically, the energies are there to serve Krishna. Krishna just, you know, thinks about something, decides, okay, I think this is what should happen, and it's carried out. So that's what's meant by that. And Prabhupada makes, in the next sentence, he makes a distinction between us and Krishna. He says, we may think of doing something, but there are so many impediments, and sometimes it is not possible to do as we like. But when Krishna wants to do something, he reiterates the same point, but when Krishna wants to do something, simply by his willing, everything is performed so perfectly that one cannot imagine how it is being done. So that's a really good thing to remember. I mean, among other things, but that's certainly a nice, important thing to remember about Krishna, you know, about the position of Krishna. It's simply by his willing, everything is performed so perfectly that one cannot imagine how it is being done. And if you just kind of like, you know, logically, you think about that and follow the logic there, it means devotees, we should never be hopeless or totally discouraged. In our devotional service, thinking that, like, oh, now we're doomed, or now this is impossible, or there's no hope, you know. No, because this sentence, if you just think about this sentence, it's shows that that's not the case. Krishna is the supreme controller, right? He's the origin of everything. He's in control of everything. And, you know, anything he wants to happen, happens. Anything he doesn't want to happen, doesn't happen. So there's different, like in, I think it's in the 18th chapter, there's five factors of action that are being described. But it points out that the ultimate determining factor, this is the point I want to make, the ultimate determining factor in anything and everything is the unconstrained will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kind of like that. The ultimate determining factor in anything and everything is the unconstrained will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So ultimately, Krishna's in control. So it's a good thing to remember. Very, you know, encouraging. So, So going on here, so that's about the demoniac kings. He annihilated by their glance. So the glance means Krishna just desired it. And in this way, he annihilated these demoniac kings on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He declared victory for Arjuna. You know, once again, see Arjuna, Krishna wanted him to be the hero. Okay? Actually, Arjuna was a great warrior. I mean, he was an incredible warrior. But actually, elsewhere, it's described how he was really, in one sense, he was no match for personalities like Bhishma, Dronacharya, Karna, even Kripacharya. I mean, they were like, I think there's a verse in the first canto where it's described that Arjuna was like a fig in comparison to some of these other warriors. So as great a warrior as Arjuna was, he wasn't a match for those guys, you know. But it was Krishna's desire that he be the hero, victorious. And there's one translation in, one text in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna basically reveals that to Arjuna. He says, therefore, get up and prepare to fight, and win victory. Your enemies have already been destroyed by my arrangement, and you, Savyasachin, could just be an instrument. You know, and he elaborates upon that in the next verse. So that was the idea that, you know, Krishna decided the Pandavas are going to be victorious and Arjuna is going to be the hero, and that's that. And so he's encouraging Arjuna, just go ahead and fight and don't worry about it. I'll take care of the rest, but you got to fight. You know, Arjuna had to, that was his devotional service. His devotional service was fighting, and Krishna wanted him to do that. So now here in the purport, Prabhupada makes an interesting point. He says about the others, referring to these demoniac kings, they were killed simply by the Lord's glance, which cleansed them of all sinful activities and enabled them to attain swarupya. So what's going on here? So, I mean, is Krishna punishing them or is Krishna rewarding them? I mean, you know, we're just hearing about how I was just making the point that, yeah, these people are, you know, they're demoniac and they're creating they're a burden because they're blocking other people's opportunities for self-realization, et cetera, et cetera. And Krishna's, decided that they should all be killed, and et cetera. But now we hear that they're getting cleansed of all their sinful activities and they're enabled to attain sarupya. Sarupya, by the way, is a personal form of liberation. It's not sayuja. Sayuja is like the merging, but sarupya, rupya means form. So that means they go into at least Vaikuntha, So how does that work? I mean, well, that's the special mercy of Krishna. You know, there's certain things that are like special concessions. Anybody who's killed, as Prabhupada describes elsewhere, anybody who's killed in the presence of Krishna, they get liberation. So he did both. The answer to my question is, was he punishing them or rewarding them? Both. In one sense, I mean, certainly they're getting killed, so that's kind of a punishment. But because of that special arrangement, they got sarupya mukti. They got elevated to, Vaikuntha planets or better, who knows. But there's another example of that is, and if I'm not getting this exactly right, somebody could, at the end of the class, please remember this point and we could talk about it a little bit more. But this is my understanding, that it's a special mercy. And another example of that is if anybody remembers Krishna at the time of death, they get liberation. They could be a total non-devotee. They could have done zero, throughout their entire lifetime practically. But if somehow or another somebody remembers Krishna at the moment of death, they get liberation. And The evidence for that or the is from is Prabhupada. There was one occasion where this devotee, I think his name was Kartikeya. He was an early disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And his mother was not favorable, particularly. She was more or less, you know, not interested. And he used to go visit his mother, and she never really had time. And she was, you know, I mean, she was tolerant at best. And she just kind of indulged him. But she wasn't into it. She wasn't into being, you know, at all devotional or anything like that, you know. But she was aware of her son's activities and all. Anyway, so some time passed, and then his mother was, I believe, in the hospital. And she was, you know, she was terminally ill. Or anyway, he went to visit her, okay? And he goes into the room, and she sees him, and she says, "So, is your Krishna here now?" And that was it. And she left after that. So he went back and told Prabhupada that, and Prabhupada said, and he's on a lecture, you could hear it. Prabhupada said, "Yeah, by her son, due to her son's, you know, association, she got liberation." So Prabhupada confirmed that she got the mercy, even though she was not a devotee. And if anything, I mean, she wasn't favorable even particularly, but she got the mercy because she remembered Krishna at the last moment of her life. So that's another example of how the special mercy of Krishna. So anyway, main point being, though, that you know, Prabhupada, twice in this purport, he says, Parichanaya sadhanam vinishaya chaduskriminaya, and he refers to that as the mission of the Lord, right in the beginning of the purport and at the end of the purport. It's his mission to deliver the pious and annihilate the miscreants. But then, as I pointed out, in the very next phrase is dharma samstapanarthaya. That's how he does it, reestablishing the principles of religion. You see, reestablished. That's what Krishna's interested in. Actually, that is the purpose of this whole material world. You know, reestablishing the principles of religion. The ultimate principle of religion being, anybody want to venture a guess? The ultimate principle of religion? Yeah. Yeah. Another educated bhakta, surrender to Krishna. That's the ultimate, you know, religious principle. Surrender to Krishna, engaging in pure devotional service. So that's the whole purpose of this material world. And that's what Krishna's interested in. You know, somebody could say, well, you know, there's different purposes for this material world. There are. One is, you know, it's a place where people can come and get reactions. The condition of the souls who are rebellious can get an opportunity to enjoy. You know, it's a place where the people get reactions to their sinful activities or their karma, you know, their material activities, sinful or pious. And those are correct. But as far as what Krishna's interested in, he's interested in that act. He's interested in the dharma, some stuff and art there. Krishna's not interested in, you know, giving the souls a chance to enjoy materially, or he's not interested in seeing that, making sure that all the people have misbehaved, you know, suffering accordingly. No. What he's interested in is seeing is a nice, you know, opportunity for conditioned souls to reform themselves, to rehabilitate themselves, and once again elevate themselves to the platform of devotional service, so at the end of this lifetime they can get out of here, you know, get out of this material world and go back to, you know, either Vaikuntha or Goloka Vrindavan, which we originally came from, you know. Yeah, so this is Krishna's, what Krishna's interested in, getting us out of here, getting us back home, back to Godhead. That's why he created the misunderstanding between the family members. That's why he, you know, annihilated the demoniac kings on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, giving them liberation and also making it, clearing the path, clearing the way for other people to get liberation, because now these guys are out of the picture and, you know, they're going to not be a disturbance and interference. And finally, he instructed Uddhava about transcendental life and devotion. See? Like speaking Bhagavad Gita. Actually, the Uddhava Gita, which is these instructions he gave to Uddhava, are found in the I believe the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and they're considered even on a higher level than the Bhagavad Gita, right? But since we have so much difficulty even assimilating the Bhagavad Gita, then, you know, we kind of stick to that. But yeah, they're actually considered on even a higher level. Uddhava is considered even a more advanced devotee than Arjuna, if I'm remembering correctly. He was a cousin. He had some relationship to Krishna, and he's a very advanced devotee. So, so that's what Krishna's interested in. Krishna's interested in helping the souls, his, you know, spiritual offspring. We're all like Krishna's spiritual children, so to speak, to go come back to him and our real home, Vaikuntha or Goloka Vrindavan. So we should be interested in that. We should be interested in that. And we should cooperate with the arrangements Krishna's made to get us out of here. You know, we should cooperate. And I've given this example before, you know, so I'll just really give it real briefly now because probably many of you heard it. Before I was a devotee, I used to work in a hospital. I was a male nurse's aide. And one of the things I had to do was get the people out of the chair, you know, because the patients, they're either in bed a lot or in chair a lot. So sometimes, you know, these were older people, a lot of them too. So after sitting in a chair for, you know, a couple hours, it's uncomfortable. So they would be, you know, going, oh, get me out of this chair, get me out of this chair, you know. And so I'd come along. And anyway, so I tried to get them out of the chair. But, you know, to make a long story short, how many have heard this story before? How many remember me telling it before? A couple. Okay, so I'll give you the short version. Anyway, when I tried to get them out of the chair, this is the same people who are going like, oh, get me out of this chair. The first thing they do is I start to lift up is they grab onto the rails, you know, the side rails of the chair, and they'd be holding onto it with all their strength. And I have to lift them in the chair at the same time. In other words, I have to get like another person to pry open their hands so I could lift them out and put them in the bed. So in other words, the point is, and the same thing, getting them out of the bed and putting them into the chair. So the point is that they weren't cooperating. You know, on the one hand, they're crying out, please help me, get me out of this chair, get me out of this bed, as the case may be. But then when you go to pull them out, you know, they're grabbing on. And they're making it twice as difficult for you. So we don't want to be like that. You know, we want to, you know, we're here, and so that kind of represents us crying out to Krishna, to God, please help me. You know, I can understand this is a horrible place, a miserable place of suffering and everything. I don't want to know about this place. You know, really, God, let me get out of here. Take me back to the spiritual world. And but simultaneously, sometimes we tend to maintain material attachments. You know, like, is that, which offense is that? It's also an offense to is that the 11th offense? Which offense is that? Maintain material attachments despite hearing and we tend to do that sometimes. So we have to just try to work at letting go. You know, let go. Let go of those material attachments and let Krishna just yank us out of here. We really do want to get out of here. The other day, Jai Kush and I were at Pierce College, and you know, there's these people out there from, maybe it was Go Vegan or one of those organizations that promotes, you know, they're like animal rights advocates, and they were handing out their pamphlets. And so I, you know, picked up one and I was looking at it and looking at the stuff. And I actually talked to one of the guys who was doing it. And, you know, so he was giving me some of the facts, you know, how many animals, I think it was something like 10 billion or something like that, are killed every year here just in the United States. And he was describing, you know, what factory farms are like. And he was making the point that actually the only thing farm about these factory farms is that there's animals involved. I mean, otherwise they're just factories. In the factory, what's going on in a factory? A factory is just a place where they're trying to maximize production, you know, in the most efficient way. So there's no consideration for feelings of another living creature or anything like that. That's factory, okay? Even the workers probably have it pretty tough. But so that's what these factory farms are like. There's no consideration that this is a living thing. They just, like, if a male chick is born, because they don't, you know, they just put them on a conveyor belt and they just get grinded to shreds and then thrown in a garbage bag. In other words, the point I'm trying to make is that this place is crazy. I mean, you walk around sometimes, and at least I do, I think, oh yeah, this is pretty okay. You know, it's like, devotees are nice, and there's other nice people out there, and things are pretty nice, you know. But then if you just kind of like, just look a little bit, you know, just peel away the cover a little bit and look at what's going on, you know, outside this temple, the kind of life, that activities that are being supported, I don't want to have anything to do with that, you know. It's actually, I mean, like, it's horrific. It's just kind of kept out of the sight of human beings somehow or another. They've managed to keep these things away from people's, you know, out of sight, out of mind. It's happening someplace where people don't live and people can't get to. Actually, these people who do these videos for these animal rights advocates organizations, they got to do it. They have to sneak in. They don't get permission to do it. They're actually risking, you know, getting whatever by doing that. But once again, point is that we don't want to be here. You know, we really don't want to be here. It's actually, if you stop and think about the kind of things that are going on in this material world by human beings, it's embarrassing. I mean, I feel like ashamed to be part of it. You know, I just feel like, man, this is pathetic. You know, let me out of here. It's just like, you know, the other day when I was mentioning that. You know, there's two. Krishna says in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that there's two types of living entities. There's the fallible and the infallible. And the fallible are all the living entities in the material world, and the infallible are in the spiritual world. And over 90%, Prabhupada was asked, you know, do all the souls come to the material world? And Prabhupada said, no, 10%, less than 10%. So, you know, you got to understand, this is the dregs. You know, we're like in the bottom 10% of the class here. And human beings are like, so it's not like a, it's really, it's no honor to be here in the material world. We should really be thinking like how to get out of here. And Krishna's trying to do that, and we should cooperate. And I don't know, how's the time? Okay. I always think I'm not going to say anything, but I was already quarter past, but I'll just make one point. So we have to be practical. You know, we're very fortunate. We're here in the temple. It's actually, whether we realize it or not, we're enrolled in the Going Back to Godhead University just by being here, you know. And it's just like in a university, you have to take certain classes, prerequisite courses. So in the same way, we have some prerequisite courses. There's the Mangal Arati course, the Tulsi Puja course, the Greeting the Deities and Guru Puja course, the Srimad Bhagavatam course like that, and chanting Japa course. These are the courses. You take those courses and you're progressing in the university, and when you graduate, you go back to Godhead. And, you know, we're very fortunate here in New Dwarka. We have a lot of serious devotees around here. If you're having problems with devotional service, just, you know, get some advice. Actually, I had an interesting example of you can get advice from an expert and it can save a situation. This is kind of a mundane example, but it makes the point. Have a pair of shoes, hiking, you know, shoes. And a perfectly good pair of shoes, but I'm wearing them, and somehow or another, my toe is banging against the front of the left shoe, and it's hurting. So I'm thinking, what to do? I mean, this is a good pair of shoes. I don't want to just throw out this pair of shoes. It's still, you know, I only like half used them, but at the same time, I can't keep wearing my shoes if they're hurting my feet, right? So what to do? So I was thinking, at first I was thinking, I got to throw these shoes out and buy a whole new pair of shoes. It means give out, you know, waste $50 and spend another $100. But then I went to, I bumped into Karun Avatar, you know, one of the handymen here. And I told him what was going on. He said, you know what? Sometimes I can stretch shoes. So I went to this place I knew about in downtown Los Angeles, Pico and 4th. I found this place. It was a shoe repair place. And I said to the guy, can you stretch this? He said, no, I can't stretch that. It's vinyl. We can stretch the leather shoes, but we can't stretch the vinyl shoes. So he said, but anyway, look, he took out a little, like a pencil with a little razor blade on the end. And he said, wait a second, I think I could help you. And he just went like this. He just went, shh. He just made a slit. He just made a little slit on the bottom of the vinyl, and then another couple, and it's, you know, one slit like that, and a slit up, and a slit up. He made like a little doggy hatch, you know, just so the thing could move, but it didn't come off. And he said, try that. That should loosen it up, because, you know, the thing came out a bit because he cut it open, and it was also could move. So he said, try that. So I put it on, and I walked around, and I said, that was it. Solved the whole problem. I said, well, do I owe you anything for that? He said, well, you give me something. I gave him a couple bucks. In other words, so there I was. I was ready to throw out that perfectly good pair of shoes and buy another pair of shoes. But this guy, because he was an expert, you see, he immediately knew what to do, and he just, with a little, practically nothing at all, adjustment, he saved the whole situation. So in the same way, we might be having some problem in our devotional service, and thinking like, oh, this is the end. This is, I can't, you know, what do I do here? This is a problem. No. What seems like an insurmountable obstacle for us, you take your problem to a devotee, somebody you have faith in, and, you know, you can see is doing a well in devotional service, has been a devotee, very solid, very steady, been around for a long time, somebody you respect and, you know, you look up to, and just reveal your mind, present your problem, and they might give you just such a simple solution to the whole thing, solves the whole problem, solves you from having to change your service, change your temple, change your ashram, whatever. That's what. Just like you have an expert shoe repair, you can have an expert devotional service repair. So association of devotees is very important. I used to live in New Zealand for a while, 5 years, and I had a friend. He was a devotee, and he was the financial registrar for the Auckland Institute of Technology, which is kind of like, you know, New Zealand's equivalent to MIT or something like that. So one day he asked me, because at one time I was doing some management over there, he said, "What do you think the most important thing in any organization is?" So I said, "Well, I guess the assets, you know." He said, "No." He said, "The personnel, the people. The people, you see? So the people are the most important thing in any organization." That's at least that was what they, you know, taught him in the business world like that. So yeah, so here we are. We're very fortunate to be in New Dwarka, you know, to have so many senior devotees who are still seriously practicing Krishna consciousness. Everybody should feel we should all feel some responsibility, you know, to keep New Dwarka at least as good as it is and make it better. And that's a very important part of that is participating in the programs, you know, like especially like now, you know, there's that expression, while the cat's away, the mice will play. So we don't want to be like a bunch of playing mice. You know, we want to be not that. We want to come to the program and support the whole effort, you know, of what we're trying to do here in this temple, keep a very buoyant, vibrant spiritual atmosphere. And that, in order for that to be maintained, devotees have to participate. They have to, you know, come to the Mangalore. I just heard Prabhupada saying, you know, I was listening to a lecture this morning, that's compulsory. So we should do these things. And this way, New Dwarka will stay at least as good as it is and get better. And it'll be good for us. It'll be good for, you know, for future devotees and everybody in general. So anyway, so I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah. Garanga Premapu.
By his grants.
Yep.
There's a kind of thought coming into my mind. If it's not correct, you please kindly rectify me, huh? So it is said that Lord Krishna, simply by his grants, so he impregnated all the conditioned soul into this material world. If Lord Krishna can do that, so certainly he can kill all the demoniac soldiers by his grants.
I agree.
Because ultimately, you know, even Lord Parashuram, he can kill his enemy at the speed of the mind, you know.
Yeah, I'm not saying Krishna couldn't do it. I'm saying he didn't do it like that. That's what, because if you read the Mahabharata, it's day one, day two. There's 18 days, you know, and Krishna was glancing all over the place. It's not like every time Krishna looked at somebody, they dropped dead, you see. That's why I'm suggesting that it's meant to be taken more metaphorically than literally. Because, you know, we have full descriptions of the battle of Kurukshetra from the Mahabharata, and, you know, it doesn't describe that that's what happened. You know, how the people got killed was Arjuna shot him, or this one, you know, something like that. It wasn't that Arjuna was just sitting on the chariot and Krishna was glancing around, and every time Krishna looked at somebody, they dropped dead. That's the point I was making. So that's why I was suggesting that it's meant to be taken more as metaphorically as a figure of speech than literally like that.
Thank you very much.
Fine enough, Prabhu. Yeah.
Thank you for your wonderful class, Prabhu. You mentioned about in your class that whoever thinks Krishna at the time of death, they'll go back to Godhead.
I heard Prabhupada say it.
So my question is, if somebody thinking about criticism at the time of death, so where they go or they'll take what
they're
kind of
thinking about what?
Criticism. At the time of death, so what kind of body they get?
Anyway, I don't know. It's kind of getting. I can't get too. All I know is I heard Prabhupada say, if you think of Krishna, if you're remembering Krishna at the moment of death, he said it's a special. He used the word consideration, special concession. You back to Godhead. It's a special mercy. Somehow or another, if somebody remembers Krishna at the moment of death, they go back to Godhead. Okay, so we'll end on that note. Thank you very much. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Are you going to the washroom?
Yeah, I'd like to. If I had time, I was going to say.